Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm home.
Hey everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Patreon a day early or in the main feed. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Finlay Martin. Finn, how are you doing today?
Kenny, I'm doing well, yes. No complaints. How about yourself?
I'm good. We are edging ever so closer to people being able to pre-order the Power Slam yearbook, first volume of 1995. I mean,
part one, yes. I mean, you've seen the cover. Has the cover been released yet? I don't think it has it?
No, I know. As far as I'm aware, no, well, I mean, I know this because I'm involved in this thing. In the next, it's not even weeks, in the next few days, the pre-order will be up for people to buy this one. So we are approaching the finish line very, very soon. So if you have been chomping at the bit to get the next issue or the next copy of the yearbook, the next volume, then it's very close. And
very close. This will include issues 7 to 12 of Power Slam, and there will be 6 pages of original content at the start, so which I am very close to finishing. We're pretty close. And anyway, I don't want to say any more because all will be revealed shortly.
Exactly. So you're going to get, you know, more bonus content. I think it's safe to say it will be available before the end of May.
Yes,
I can say that.
Yes, it definitely will be.
So we're you know, I'm not committing to anything further than that. You know,
yeah, it'll definitely be next month, it will definitely be next month, and more will be revealed very shortly.
And you know, I mean, the thing is, because you know, there's actually a kind of mini trailer thing that's going to come out about that, and I the reason I bring it up here, this is an absolute plug question, Finn, but fuck it, it's our podcast, we can plug if we want. You know, when we got together and we kind of sat down and talked about Power Slam, the history of Power Slam, there's a clip that's coming out, and it's of you talking about interviewing Steve Austin in 1995 for that issue. And you know if you can
1994 remember, Kenny 1994 1994.
Yeah, and but you remembered the exact where you were when you interviewed Steve Austin, and you remembered the whole kind of surrounding of it. And I mean, you know, when you think about it, you know, when you get to read it, my point is, in that issue, is it's a Steve Austin who you can already see the start of him, the discontent and the kind of frustration in WCW. And it's interesting, even as far back as when you interviewed him in late 94, it's the Stone Cold is, you know, you can ever so slowly see that kind of character is coming out of him.
Yeah, he's wanting to burst out of his shell. He's had enough, you know, and that interview in issue 6 of Power Slam that's, you know, available in the first yearbook, it's, you know, it's in character, and kayfabe is still running the show because it's 94. But there was a lot of, you know, genuine frustration that was very obvious in his answers. And I think a lot of us wanted him, you know, when you're a wrestling fan, I guess it's like being a sports fan. In fact, it's exactly like that. And you often want the best. And, you know, when we do these podcasts, we knock things. People go, oh, you're just being snide. You're just sniping and blah, blah, blah. It's okay. Sometimes we are a little bit snide, but not very often, I don't think. And ultimately, what we want is we want the business to be better, and we want people to be used to the best of their abilities. And back in 1994, it was clear that Austin, he was one of the casualties of the Hogan regime, and Hogan took over. He joined earlier in 1994 and brought all his pals, and guys like Austin were not in the Hogan Club, and they were no longer going to be featured as highly as longtime WCW fans wanted them to be, and obviously in the way that Austin wanted to be featured, because people had said, this guy's going to be a world champion. And Hogan arrives and, you know, he loses the US title to Jim Duggan, right? I mean, a very famous match at Clash. And people were furious. I mean, we read the letters out, didn't we, from those issues of Power Slam on the Overrun.
Mm-hmm.
And people were furious with the way that he was treated. And Austin was as well. And, you know, that frustration continued to grow. And, you know, his discontent, you know, festered throughout 95. And it was really no surprise that he ended up being fired, didn't he? I mean, I think a lot of us thought that he would just quit. And if he hadn't been fired, I think he would have quit. But yeah, that was, it was a fascinating interview to do at the time, given the limitations of what we could talk about in 1994. And with somebody who was a big star and felt like, you know, it was, you know, the quote was, I'm being underutilized. You know, I'm being held back. I'm not being used to the best of my abilities. So, you know, I very much felt his pain, you know, and wished the best for him. And obviously it worked out in the end.
It did. And, you know, 1995 is such a, even the first half, such an interesting year, because WWF is kind of on this, you know, we've been reviewing the issues on Patreon the last few weeks, because I think we're now on to the next one we're doing is the first one that's not in volume two, the next volume that's coming out, because the next one is 7 to 12. But I mean, you know, you're looking at the WWF starting to kind of decline. You're looking at, you know, WCW having this kind of like weird thing where they've got somebody like Vader, who's like a killer, and he's got to kind of go up against Mr. Cartoon Mania himself. And I think people are going to get a real kick out of the next volume. So
It was a very strange time, because there was, you know, there was really good things happening. Well, very few. Well, actually, not many really good things happening, but there were good things happening. But they were unfortunately dragged down by, you know, the worst aspects of pro wrestling, which were very much on display in 95, particularly over the summer. Actually, the second half of 95 in many ways was worse than the first half. But also, if you think about it, that was when Monday Nitro launched. And that changed everything. And it took a while for us to realize, you know, what a sea change that would be, you know, the Monday Night War and everything. But I mean, at least by the end of 95, you know, it feels like things are possibly turning around and are going to get better. And certainly into 96, that's the big change, isn't it? Certainly for WCW, 97 was a big change for WWF. But it's, 95 is very much a sort of, you know, the nadir for big time pro wrestling in the States.
Yeah.
And actually in Japan as well, lots of problems there with FMW, UWFI. You know, they had to reach out to New Japan to basically prop them up, and that was in second half of 95. So, you know, lots of changes, lots of interesting stuff going on, and we, you know, it's all going to be there in the yearbook, so you can read about that when it comes out next month.
Yes. Well, listen, let's move into the news. So yesterday an article came out from NBC News, which was an article on Vince McMahon. And it was basically kind of talking about what he's been up to since. The fact, I mean, you almost couldn't make this up. It said that since he's been away, that he has, you know, been going on holiday. He's been going, you know, he's been on his private jet. He's been going places. Sees his longtime barber for bi-weekly haircuts, and, you know, just a lot of weird stuff. Also talking about how he, when he went to Italy, I mean, I'm going to read this. This is a weird quote, talking about what he's been up to since all these allegations. And it says, for instance, on an afternoon in late March, McMahon returned on a private plane to the United States from the sunny Turks and Caicos Islands, But he wasn't alone, according to one person close to him. He had with him 7 kittens and a puppy, all of which he brought back to be adopted by his friends. If anything, he's enjoying life, said the person who added that McMahon is also taking a trip to Italy. I mean, this fluff piece is bizarre. And then later on, it goes on to name that he's stayed in touch with Donald Trump, but also he has been in touch with Dwayne The Rock Johnson and John Cena.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I mean, it almost feels like someone on Vince's side has sort of got NBC to write something about him, because I can't really understand why there'd be an article confirming that Vince McMahon gets to go on holiday and he's bringing kittens back for his friends. It just feels like a bizarre thing for an outlet like NBC to be putting out.
Mm. Well, I mean, they've had obviously a decades-long relationship with him on and off, haven't they? So it's like, I mean, yeah, it does feel like a, you know, like a fluff piece, doesn't it? And yeah, very odd. I didn't know he was like an animal lover. That was not something that I was aware of. And it almost feels like it's like here he is, he's saving the kittens. You know, never mind all that bad stuff he's accused of. Look at this good stuff, he's saving the kittens. And it almost feels like that, doesn't it?
It does. But the reason I bring Vince up, that obviously is just something that came out yesterday. But I wanted to ask you your opinion, because this is something that maybe in a year's time we'll be able to look back and see if you were right or wrong on this. So no pressure, Finn. But as of January 2025, technically, Vince McMahon's no-compete clause ends. And apparently, because he's now selling all of his remaining stock in PTO, which I think, if he sells all, it's going to be like worth $7 billion or something. It's like an insane amount of money. Do you think he's going to start his own wrestling promotion?
He's going to start his own animal sanctuary, Kenny. That's what he's going to start.
The World Kitten Federation.
Exactly. I mean, actually, just going back to what the idea, you know, the revelation that John Cena, according to this story, is still in touch with him, is not a surprise. Following Cena's comments to Howard Stern, right?
Yes, that's, we knew that one.
Yeah, that's no surprise to anyone. I mean, I remember when the no-compete ended with Turner back in the 2000s. There was all this talk that he might launch, you know, a new company, you know, after they'd sold WCW to what was then the WWFE. And there was this talk, oh, yeah, he's going to get back into wrestling. But, and it never occurred. It never materialized. And this talk that Vince, who turns 79 in August, and I know he's told people or has told people in the past that he's going to live to be 100 years old. So, you know, he's still got 20 years left in his mind. I mean, I suppose conceivably he could set up his own organization. It could happen. But, I mean, which TV company, Kenny, is going to screen it? No TV company is going to screen it if he's involved. You could say, well, he's just going to put it on YouTube, or he's just going to, you know, set up his own streaming service, or he's going to do this, or he's going to do that. But I mean, and at the end of the day, why would he? You know, why would he do that? Because, you know, okay, there's probably tension there between him and members of the family. I don't know that for a fact, but I imagine there is. You know, over everything that's been said, you know, the new era, moving on, and obviously, you know, what happened in January, there's going to be, you know, it's not hard to understand that there's going to be a lot of tension there, right?
Yeah.
But for me, you know, to imagine that Vince would then set up a company that could conceivably or in some way be a rival to his creation, I mean, I just can't see it. And like, yeah, he would find people to work for him because people would. It's like, oh, no one's going to work for him because it's Vince McMahon. There's plenty of people out there that would work for him if the money was right. So I just don't see it. I just don't see it getting off the ground. I just don't see Vince, doing something like that. I just can't, because it's going to require too many people. And okay, he's got the money, but what would be the end game of all that? How big would it, how big could it conceivably be, given the limitations there will be of the company, because it's his company and because his name is tainted. So I just don't see it. I just can't see it happening. I just don't see it happening. What do you think, Kenny?
I think he is going to try. In spite of all the stuff you're saying, I'm not saying it's going to be successful. I don't think it will. But if you kind of look at Vince McMahon over the years, he's not a rational human being. He's not someone who kind of takes the loss very well. He's pumped so much money over the years into things that have failed because he didn't like the idea that he failed. And I mean, this is the same guy that when after all these allegations had come out, and say 10% of what is being said about him is true, right? Which is a conservative estimate when you look at how many women that are involved and all the stuff. But even if you were to put a low estimate of that on it, he still came back and sort of forced everyone in the board, including his son-in-law and his daughter, to basically vote for him to get him back in. So I think he, I don't think the logical part of his brain works anymore, and I think that he will. I think you're right. I think there definitely will be a strain in the family, especially given how, they talk, because they don't say anything about him, but you can kind of infer by everything what they're saying by what they're not saying. Stephanie coming out and like, this is the Paul Levesque era, and Paul Heyman saying, I'll forever be a Paul Levesque guy and all this stuff. It's basically a big FU
Just
to him.
going on about how there's far more creative freedom now, and it's a new day, and it's much better than it was.
Yeah, and even like stuff. I mean, the fact that the product's doing better than it has in years, the ratings are up more than they've been in years. The live attendance, the production, like everything's better without him. And that's not. He doesn't strike me as someone who's going to go, oh, great, I'm glad it's doing well without me. I think he's going to be vindictive, and I think that he's going to. But I mean, the thing is, if he does try, like you say, who's going to want to take him? I mean, I think some TV stations probably would take him because he's Vince McMahon, but. I don't think they probably understand the fact that like who would his roster be? Who would he get? Who's available? I mean, maybe he'll get Goldberg. Maybe he'll start his promotion with Goldberg and Velveteen Dream and people who are not signed and who nobody's touching for various reasons. Obviously, Goldberg and Velveteen Dream are very different. Goldberg's not done anything wrong, but you know what I'm saying? Just people who are not signed. So I think he is going to try something, but. Whether it ends up like Jeff's Global Force Wrestling, I don't know, but it feels like it's going to be more. I don't think it's going to work.
I just don't see how people would take it that seriously. And I think all it would do is it's just going to whip up more anti Vince sentiment, and there's already plenty of that out there. Depending on what happens with the civil lawsuit and whether that leads to anything else, and we'll just have to wait and see on that one. If it's all died down in terms of like not actually going to court by the end of the year, and then Vince announces, oh, he's starting his own company, there's just gonna be this like deluge of bad publicity towards McMahon again, because oh, Vince McMahon's starting up his own company, and then all the stories of why he's no longer involved with WWE will be repeated. And at that point, I think most sponsors, advertisers, potential partners would just sort of say, there's no way we can do business with this guy, because how is it going to reflect on us? Terribly. So, I mean, yeah, he might do something that's entirely, self-funded, but in terms of actually finding business partners, I just don't see how anyone would want to go into business with him at the moment. I just can't see it. So maybe he'll do something, and I don't know. I have no idea what he could do. He could do something very small. Yeah, that could happen. But in terms of something with national exposure, who would want to be involved, Kenny?
No, I don't. I think if it does happen, it is going to be self-funded. That's going to be the only way it can work because, yeah, people are not. If people, So what's the risk versus the reward, you know, to getting involved with him? Because he's not a, I mean, it's not the same thing, but it's all in the same ilk of like, was anybody chomping at the bit to, you know, do stuff with Harvey Weinstein? I mean, I know you couldn't, but like nobody wanted to do movies with him after everything
No.
happened. So, you know, they would, because in business, people want things to die down before they get back into bed with somebody. Well, that's a bad choice of phrase, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's January 2025 is when he is technically able to do something, and I just don't think that his ego, from what we've seen over the years, is gonna sort of lay down and die. I think he's gonna try something. So,
I mean, even if you want to do some sort of developmental type thing, and oh, I'm going to put all this money in and I'm going to create this. I mean, that would then be treading on NXT's toes because there's so much in money invested in that and it's so huge and, you know, it's run so well. And it's like, well, who would he get to run it for him? You know, it's, yeah, I mean, maybe he'll do something. But I just can't see it having legs. And I can't see it really going anywhere because just walls will just appear. You know, there'll be just barriers everywhere to so many of the things that he would like to do. I mean, if he's going to go into something, there's going to be an ambition there, isn't there? For it to be bigger in 6 months and 1 year and 18 months than it is on day one. And I'm not sure how it could grow because he would be involved, and you know, he's obviously tarnished.
Well, we will be here to cover whatever shit show he starts, if he does start something.
Yeah.
But listen, somebody asked us a question. I cannot find the tweet or the message, so I'm gonna have to, whoever wrote this, I apologize in advance. But somebody had asked a question about after the Jimmy and Jay match at WrestleMania about brothers facing off and why
Wasn't it
typically that
posted
doesn't.
on the ITR Facebook page?
It could have been. Somebody messaged us or asked us about it, and I said I would bring it up, but I've forgotten who it was. You know, feel free to tweet me or tag me in something, and I'll give you the credit next week that it was your question. But the whole point was that Jimmy and Jay was a big flop on the
Yeah.
night, and the point was, you know, apart from Bret and Owen at WrestleMania 10, brother versus brother has tended not to work. If you look at Matt and Jeff multiple times, you look at obviously Jimmy and Jay here. You know, even kind of fictional brother stuff's not really worked for the most part. But why do you think that it doesn't tend to work? Is there a reason, or is it just kind of coincidence that the ones they've tried have not really tended to work on average?
I mean, yeah, obviously Bret and Owen did work very well. You know, and there was matches, you know, in Stampede as well. There's obviously all the hearts there and everything. So, I mean, Terry Funk and Dory Funk Jr., I think they had a very famous match in All Japan in the final of a tournament. I'm sure they did. I don't know if you can look that one up because I remember seeing it on the cover of an old wrestling magazine and seeing a picture of it in, I think it was The Wrestler, one of the old PWI magazines from years ago. And that was a very famous match. But generally, they teamed together in All Japan. They were not opponents. And, you know, this, I think it was the final of the tournament. This tournament was booked in such a way, wow, you know, we're going to see Terry versus Dory. But I mean, Bret and Owen worked well, obviously. I mean, it was Owen turned on Bret, and then they had the match in the opening match of WrestleMania 10. And at the time, it was thought to be one of the greatest matches in the history of WrestleMania. And Owen scored this not fluke victory, a convincing victory to set him up as the first challenger for Bret after Bret won the title in the main event of the show. And they had, you know, a really good run there at the house shows for a while, Bret and Owen. Then they clashed at SummerSlam. You know, Owen cost Bret the title, convinced Helen to throw in the towel, right? When Bob Backlund had the chicken wing on in their interminable match at Survivor Series of 1994. So, I mean, that just ran and ran. But as far as Jimmy and Jay, I think it could have worked. And this is the frustrating thing about it, going back to what I said earlier about how we want wrestling to be better. And I think Jimmy and Jay could have worked. I think it could have worked really well, actually. But as you point out many times, the whole Jimmy turning on Jay at SummerSlam last year and then rejoining Roman Reigns and the Bloodline just was never explained. We were never received even... Did we receive any explanation, never mind a satisfactory one? Can you remember if we got any explanation, Kenny, for that? Because I can't.
No, he never explained why he was back in the Bloodline. He never... There was no explanation, as far as I remember. And if there was one, it was so crap that neither of us can remember it, which is not a great sign, given that our job is to remember stuff.
Exactly. I mean, to me, matches, in order for a match to be truly great, it needs to have meaning and it needs to have a purpose. So if you look at Jay versus Jimmy at WrestleMania, what was really at stake there? There wasn't anything at stake, was there? I guess Jay was furious with Jimmy for turning on him at SummerSlam the previous year and going with the Bloodline.
But even then, to that point, the whole time whenever Jay was out there or would do interviews, he kept saying, oh, I still love Jimmy. Like, I wish we could be together again. So yeah. there was no actual, you know, real grit to the feud.
No, there wasn't like a venom there and like a real animosity and, you know, I need to, you know, beat some sense into you or, you know, after... At the end, they could have said, listen, at the end of this, you know, I need you to shake my hand or, you know, we need to put this feud to bed or this beef to bed or... You know, we need to then team together again. There was nothing at the end of that match, was there?
No, nothing.
And they probably thought, well, we can't do that because we need Jimmy and Jay to be on opposite sides of the fence the following evening for the brawl spot, and then they fall off the ramp and crash through tables. So we can't have a resolution to this conflict on night one because we need them to be at odds on night two. And I get that, but there still should have been something at stake in night one. And I think the same applied to Matt versus Jeff. And they did the split and it seemed really half-hearted at the time, didn't it, when they did the split?
Yeah.
And I think they tried it earlier as well. I think they tried it previously to do the split and neither of them really wanted to do it. They just didn't. And I think, I'm sure Bill Watts tried to do this as well. Did he try to do this with Scott and Rick? I know he split Rick and Scott Steiner up. And that was the reason why they ended up leaving WCW in 1992. But I can't remember whether that he was ever eager to pit them against each other. Maybe I'm just inventing that. But I know Bill Watts wanted to split the team up because he felt like Scott could be a big star and they didn't want to go their separate ways at that point in their careers. So they ended up leaving the company and joining WWF. In fact, Rick and Scott had a feud, didn't they, in WCW? Yes. And that didn't work either.
No, because when Scott turned and became this big, you know, the big bad booty daddy, big papa pump, that was such a big character, and Rick just wasn't enough of a charismatic babyface to offset it.
Correct. Yeah, correct. I mean, clearly they'd strap the rocket to Scott, and instead of putting it on upside down like they did on Wardlow, they put it on the right way up, and Scott was, you know, going, well, Cameron Grimes isn't going to the moon anymore, is he, Kenny, after getting squashed by Bron Breakker? So, but Scott was there, you know, doing really well, and Rick was very much, you know, he was very much somebody who was, his career was in decline, and Scott was going to be, you know, the big project that WCW was going to turn into a main event out. At least that was the plan. He did actually become a main eventer in the end, but obviously by then WCW didn't really feel like a main event company. But yeah, Rick and Scott didn't really work either. So it definitely applies to so many of these brother feuds. And I think a lot of the time they don't really have good stories behind them or a real sort of objective. Owen and Brett being, you know, the exception because it was all about preparing Owen for the top of the card. Brett was absolutely gung-ho. Wanted this to happen. Remember, there was the big bust up with him and Bruce. Remember that story, Kenny? Because Bruce wanted to come back in and he thought it was up to the challenge. It's like, no, you're not. You know, it's going to be Owen. And that caused a big rift in the family. And, you know, Owen, I think, was up to the challenge of being Brett's challenger. And they both wanted to do it. And I think fundamentally that's what's at stake here, Kenny, is that Brett and Owen wanted to do this, they wanted this to work. And there was a reason for them to clash. You know, Owen was jealous of Brett. You know, Brett becomes champ. Owen then becomes, King of the Ring, and the company was behind it, led to the cage match, which, I never really liked that cage match very much, but lots of people thought it was brilliant. And I think a lot of it was just the story behind it. And I think a lot of the times, I think wrestling companies get lazy and think, well, it's brother versus brother, so we don't really have to try.
But in actuality, they need to try way more with that to make it successful than anything else. Because, people are already kind of programmed to... It's like when Matt and Jeff did it. In 2001, it was a bit like, oh, who cares? And then in 2009, when they did it again, they went so far in the other direction of, was it not like Matt burned Jeff's house down or something? Was the storyline in 2009 when Matt and Jeff Hardy had ended up going towards the WrestleMania 25 match?
Yeah.
They went into like a, we're gonna have him commit like, arson to try and sell it. But then it was so over the top and there was no real reason for it that nobody bought it. So,
I mean, I remember, because I think Matt was saying some pretty vindictive things as well. And I remember, I think someone interviewed their father about it and he didn't like it. I remember him commenting on it and he's like, I don't like some of the things that have been said. Do you remember that?
Yeah. I think he was, he wasn't happy. And also, like, if you go back and watch that match there at WrestleMania 25, they really go for it to try and get it over. And it just doesn't work. It just doesn't take. Nobody buys it. Nobody's that interested. And they're out there, doing all this stuff to try and sell it. And it just never worked.
I mean, you got to remember, they had the other feud in 2016, Matt and Jeff.
Oh, which God, yeah.
The broken Matt Hardy. And that, obviously, it was TNA, so it was on a much lower level. And that did work. I mean, some people didn't like it and thought that character was ridiculous, and it was ridiculous. But it was very novel. It was innovative. There's no doubt that Matt totally reinvented his career and, did very well from that character for a while, at least, before WWE got their hands on it in 2017. And then they just said, no, we're not doing this. And then later in 2017, when the nostalgia, fuel had, expired, had been depleted, it was like, right, we're now going to do Woken Matt Hardy, right?
Yep, Woken Matt.
Woken Matt Hardy. And by then it was all over. But the final deletion match between Jeff and Matt was quite an event, really, at the time. And their storylines and everything, yeah, they were totally out there. But, I mean, it was very memorable TV and, totally original. Nothing like that had ever been done before, to the best of my knowledge. It was probably as far out there as some of the stuff that Kevin Sullivan was doing in Championship Wrestling from Florida back in, like, the early 80s, and which The Undertaker and Vince Russo then recycled for the Ministry of Darkness in, like, 98, 99. So it was... I think that did work on some level, but I get the point about brothers. I think ordinarily people don't really want to see them have matches unless there's an excellent reason for them to clash. And I think a lot of it's just down to the booking. And the talent involved as well have to be gung-ho to do it. They've got to be absolutely committed to it. And if they're doing it reluctantly or half-heartedly, then it's simply not going to work. I mean, family stuff obviously works. Look at what happened with the McMahons. Vince and Shane, Vince and Stephanie. Obviously, Vince and Linda, your favourite, Kenny. but I mean, That stuff did work. So it can, family feuds absolutely can work. But I think there has to be a reason for it to take place and the people involved have got to want to do it.
Well, listen, let's end there. It was a good topic for us to discuss. We're going to do the overrun shortly, which will be up this weekend, where we will take some of your questions that didn't make the latest issue of the magazine. Lots of good stuff for us to get into there. So keep your eyes peeled on ITR social media and, our social media as well, because we'll obviously be, shouting from the rooftops about it for the next PowerSlam yearbook pre-order, which will be in the next few days. And the new issue of Inside the Ropes magazine comes out next Thursday, the 25th, I think. Am I right in that?
Yes, 25th of April. That's correct.
And then also, if you're listening to this in the main feed, patreon.com/insidetheropes is where you can get more content from us. And if you are just, for some reason, I don't know if this is humanly possible, but if you're just finding out today that we are re-releasing in full copies of the Power Slam magazine from back in the day, the first volume, which is the first six issues from 1994, July to December, is available in yearbook form now at powerslammagazine.com. Limited copies of that are still left, so do go and pick up the first one. So that is still available. So yeah, Finn, I hope you have a great weekend. And
thank you very much. Can I hope you do as well? I'm going to the Lake District, and then I'm going out to London on Sunday, first time in a while.
There you go. There you go. There'll be lots to discuss next week. We'll see what London's got to offer and if it gets the F. Martin approval. So thanks for all your support, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon. If I